Hey, everybody. Glad to have you here. you have to appreciate having a Coco on stage, right?
Oh, yeah. The robot. It's great.
I have the great pleasure of having Brian Singerman join us today. And I still forget how we met, but I think it was around Cyan Bannister.
Yep.
13, 14 years ago in a failed deal that we both acknowledged we knew the founders were great.
I don't even remember what it was, but yes, I remember.
It was that gaming thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, Brian has struck me as a very unique individual, investor, and a founders fund itself. I love the strategy. So we're not going to really talk about sectors, but we are going to dig into strategy, and I'd love to dig into founders. The thing that strikes me, you are a gamer.
I am.
How does gaming impact your fund, how you execute, how you think about running the fund?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot. We, in games, in strategy games, the right strategy is usually to like figure out who, what your team is, figure out the strengths of your team, lean into those strengths and just dominate the game via that, not try and be a, well-rounded, best at everything, but just really lean into your strengths in games. That's how you win. And I think of, that's how I think of venture capital. And so the way that we think about running Founders Fund is by bringing on people on the team who have very unique skill sets, very unique ways of looking at the world, looking at the market, talent, skill sets, that they're going to try and win the game in their way. Because I don't think that you can beat any individual on our team at their game. You can beat them at other games. And so as long as we have enough strategies running, we should be able to win.
Okay. So talking about this game, you have this cast of characters. I think you've told me in the past, there's only so many founders that are worth investing in. Founders want different things from different partners, and you guys have this cast of partners that each have different strengths and weaknesses and abilities.
That's right.
What's missing in the partnership right now?
Oh, tons. I mean, we are always and never hiring. Anytime somebody comes in with a very differentiated strategy, they've got a very differentiated background, skill set, we will take a look seriously at that if we think it can generate returns. Right, because I mean, at the end of the day, that is the only thing this is about. Right, is real returns. And so, yeah, we're always looking for somebody that's truly unique and differentiated to drive that.
Anyone getting close?
Always and never, Paige, always
okay.
And never.
Okay, so this is a zero-sum game when you think about the landscape of other VCs competing for deals?
I mean, I don't know if it's zero-sum because, you know, there's always more companies. Right, so it's not zero. It's not finite zero. It's not infinite zero sum. Right, at any one time, I do think that there's in venture capital there are very few companies that matter to funds the size of if you're a $50 million fund, right? Great. I mean, there's lots of stuff that matters and that is relevant that you can generate returns on. If you're a $500 million, billion, $2 billion, $5 billion fund, there's just very few companies that can actually move the needle on returns, and people know what those companies are, and it's very difficult to get into them, but you have to get into them. That's just the only way of generating returns on those size of funds.
Cool. Well, let's talk about how you invest. So you've said many times you are a reactive investor.
I am.
You're not the macro. Can you break that down for everyone?
Yeah, there's not one right way to do venture capital. As seen, we've got tons of people on our team that do it differently. There's great proactive investors. There's great middle, hybrid. And then I'm a reactive investor, meaning that I don't have any views on what the world will look like. I don't try and ever do VC prognosticating. I don't ever try and take a stance on what the world is going to look like in 5 years, 10 years, doesn't matter. Like I'm pure reactive, but that means like I need to be able to have people bring things to me. Since I don't have a take on what the world will look like. And I'm open to anything. Like I am as sector agnostic as you can possibly be and open to anything that has a top tier founder with, that has a very high TAM.
Yeah, and we've said the rule is essentially nothing illegal.
Nothing illegal.
Everything else is on the table.
Correct. For me.
Okay. For you. What do you look for? I know you've said many times you've tried to write down what is a founder's fund founder. Many authors have failed. But are there any patterns there for what you look for?
I think so, but it's just hard to put them in words, and I'm not very good at putting them into words. But yeah, I mean, when I see a founder that I can go to town with on strategy. And again, this is morally for mostly for like somewhat later stage because the early stages of a company, by the way, I have no idea how to build a company, but in the early stages of a company, it's just about execution, right? You just got to like get your product out there, execute, build. Strategy is kind of irrelevant at that stage. It's all about execution. And so I come in when there is some strategy to discuss, and I love the founders that are just like, that really get it. okay. on the strategic angles.
So let's talk about, I mean, you invested in Friedberg recently.
I did.
Oholo.
Yep.
Can you walk us through, I mean, obviously you've known for 20 years. What's unique about Friedberg?
Oh, everything. I mean, David Friedberg is, first of all, completely brilliant. He is a natural born CEO, and this is the company he was naturally born to run. You know, it is an ag tech, you know, an ag biotech company. You know, this is a guy who at some point was the largest individual shareholder in Monsanto. He is a natural born CEO. He dropped everything to like run this company. And one of the reasons, I mean, he was running a fund, and one of the reasons he dropped everything to run this company is because it's going to generate more returns for the fund than anything else he could possibly do, right? Because by him running this company, I mean, his fund owns a large percentage of this company. And so, and that's a general, that's a strategy with a lot of venture capitalists these days is like, you know, maybe you have to start something. And so him going to run this gives the fund the best chance of generating returns. And it does. This is an amazing company.
Yeah. And so you sit down with founders, you accept their strengths as their strengths.
Yep.
And you ask about their weaknesses and you poke. What did you learn? Like, walk us through what you learned about Friedberg.
I'll be very direct about that. Friedberg is great at running a company. Great. Probably one of the best in history. He is not good at being chairman of a company. Right? Like you don't want to be a CEO working underneath him or trying to do that. Like he just needs to be hands-on. And that's why him being in the CEO role again is just the part he was born to play. And I think a weakness of his is thinking that he can spread himself too thin, you know, have a bunch of people around him doing, you know, running stuff. No, he has to run it and he has to run one thing really well.
So when you go through that dialogue, does Founders Fund think, okay, we're going to do this to mitigate that risk, or do you just accept that is
no? We put him in the part. The only way we were going to do the investment is if he came on board as CEO, not this chairman stuff.
Okay, perfect. So you've talked about moat market execution. That's how you pick deals, and you're not a macro investor. But how do you think about the market if you're not thinking about the future?
I think about it in terms of founders and coming to pitch me with something unique. Like, you know, if we see something that there's 100 companies doing, we just can't do it. That's just the nature of the fund. It's like, you know, AI stuff, right? People come in, like, I think AI is extremely important. I think it's extremely valuable. I think it's going to change the world. I think it's completely uninvestable just because it's like the least contrarian thing in history right now. Right. And I think most of these companies are not actually AI companies. They're just like, so the way we evaluate these things is just like, okay, well, what's your actual distribution? Like what, like just any other business.
Right.
But it's by definition the least contrarian thing in history to invest in right now. And so we tend to just put a bunch of money into OpenAI and call it a day.
Okay. And your checks, I mean, you guys have done 100K to 300 million.
Yeah, we've done more than 300 million. We've done $500 million in one check right at this point.
Okay. So what is the moat if I'm an early stage company pitching you? What's my moat at that stage?
It's tough. It's just the people. Just the people. I think for early stage investing, it is completely 100%. There's nothing else to analyze.
You're just looking for some N of one person.
Yeah.
Unique fit for the problem.
Yeah, that's right.
No, what about
in any sector?
And later, I'm going A, B, like, what's that moat going to look like to you then?
Later stage?
Yeah.
I mean, then there's got to be some actual distribution, some actual numbers. And this is where I supplement myself. I have no idea how to read spreadsheets. I have no idea how to read P&Ls and all this stuff. I'm terrible at that. But I've got people on my team who are just fantastic at that. And so I think at the later stages, before we do a $500 million investment, we're going to take the pulse of every single person on the team based on their individual strengths and their individual reads of the situation,
right,
including the numbers, right? Which there's no numbers to look at early stage. It's just the people. But at the later stages, yeah, there's numbers.
Yeah. So you get a founding team, you believe in the market and the moat, and you say that you really back these founders, but you never been able to define them. You can recognize them.
Yeah.
What is it in execution that you're looking for specifically?
Well, I'm not doing a ton of seed stage, early stage stuff. So I see what they've done, what they've built, who they've supplemented themselves with on the team, what kind of product they've built, what kind of distribution they've got, how they responded to strategic threats, how they responded to, oh, you've got 100 different clones of this thing. How are you going to play that out? Right? Like I like seeing some established play on that.
Have you had teams where you believed in the execution and the partnership did not and you had to fight for it?
I think so, yeah. That happens all the time at Founders Fund. We fight for deals all the time. And based on like conviction level, it'll just get done, right? Like if you're, it's one of those situations where if you go through and you're discussing it as the partnership and nobody really else wants to do it, and you're kind of, and then you can't be high conviction, it's not going to get done, right? You can pump, you can cut through that as long as you really believe in something, but then you got to own that, right? I mean, everything is a scoreboard.
I'd like to get behind that curtain because you guys have some very interesting game dynamics.
Yeah.
Did you create a lot of those game dynamics?
I helped, but it's a partnership. I mean, you know, Peter founded the firm, you know, and he's very much like that as well.
So you guys have this thing, and I don't know the exact numbers, but certain size check one person can do, a couple people can do bigger, all of you can make a full conviction bet. What was the reasoning for this kind of complex mechanics?
Well, I mean, I think for the junior people on the team who are hiring because we see promise, I don't think there's any way of learning how to do venture capital without making investments. And so they've got to be able to, again, they have to get that conviction and they're being judged based on said conviction, right? Like, so if they're going to do some investment that goes against the grain, they can do it, right? But they have to be right.
So it's a lot of shots on goal for them to learn?
I mean, they got to be right. Okay. They can, but we enable them to do it, right? Like, again, this
is a... penalties in this game?
This is so funny because, like, venture capital, it's like, you know, you see, you go around these conferences and everybody's hugging, you know, on the outside and everybody's being very externally friendly. It is a very externally friendly, you know, thing. It just is. But, like, internally, it's just so ruthless because there's just, like, there's so few companies that matter and all of the firms know that. Like, the best firms know that it's just, like, you just have to get into one of, you know, 5 or 10 companies, depending on the stage. Again, like,
right.
Yeah, it's always
late stage. You know, the game's worth.
It's all or fun, depending on the fund size. It's all fund size dependent, right? But there's much more companies you can get into at the with a smaller fund, obviously.
Right.
And so, yeah, but at the large fund sizes, there's just it has to be ruthless.
Okay. So ruthlessness. The game mechanics here. It obviously sounds like you value individual partners and their strategies.
Yep.
And there's a real art to each partner.
I think so.
But you force them to come together, and kind of muddle their process. Is that a feature or a weakness?
There's more or less process for everybody. But we do believe in, again, especially for not for the smaller checks. But for anything larger, yeah, you want we are looking for people who have their own strategy and can run their own strategy and get their own conviction, but who are also value what their weaknesses are and know how to supplement that,
right?
Like for me, I'd write an early stage check just based on the founder, and I don't care if I talk to anybody else. But if I'm going to write, you know, if we're going to write $500 million into Stripe, yeah, we're going to have that numbers team do the analysis, and that's not me. And so it's got to be people. It's not just a conviction bet. It's got to be people who are actually like willing to accept that they've got awesome teammates who do their thing, and that's a part of the chain.
So that vote at the end of the day is probably not that important. It's that process along the way that determines what's going to happen in a decision.
It's always that process. Yeah. I mean, we don't, again, small checks happen. I don't necessarily even know of all the small checks that we've written. But yeah, no, any large check, it's a process.
Can you walk us through the most contentious deal that got approved in recent history? Without naming the company, but how the process works for you?
Let's see. Well, I don't know. I mean, no, we've invested in some pretty, you know, out there things. I mean, we invested in like Privateer, which was a medicinal marijuana company that went public, you know, a long time ago. I took my in-laws to the Canadian company to the medicinal marijuana, like, you know, farms or whatever. Not a lot of like internal discussion,
yep.
But we did it. Worked.
Okay. Was Anduril, was that a tough one to get across?
No.
That was easy. Okay.
That was maybe the easiest investment in the history of my career.
Okay. What gave you that? Was it your deal?
I mean, Trey founded the company.
Right.
So it was, he literally incubated the company. You know, we were the first investors in Oculus, and we had Palmer come to one of our, you know, events for our founders and CEOs, and he met Trey there, and they were playing some paintball, and, you know, the company came from that. Right. And so, but no, I mean, if take an industry where most, and I know it's like trendy now, but like in 2017, it was like so hated. Oh, you can't work on a defense company. That's so not Silicon Valley, whatever. And like so that's why it was the easiest investment ever. It was just so contrarian. We believe heavily in you need talented people working in every sector, including defense. And so, no, that I think that was the easiest investment in the history of Founders Fund.
Really?
I think so.
Well, so what was your hardest?
Well, I still think it was pretty easy for us. But when I joined Founders Fund is because we were looking at SpaceX, and we put, you know, 15% of the fund, you know, into SpaceX from that first institutional fund. And I was reminded last night at dinner that some of our friends at a different venture capital firm had tried to kill that first institutional fund that was raised in 2007. And then we did, you know, this investment came out of that, basically.
I think you famously had some LPs who had sour grapes and pointed towards that investment.
We did.
What were their names?
What's that?
What were their names? No.
There's some people in this front row here who might be able to tell you their names later.
But I mean, you guys are real contrarians. When you look at the landscape that we're all in right now, mm-hmm. what is a contrarian sector that you think is worth diving into?
Anything not AI.
Okay. Crypto's cool again?
Is it AI?
AI crypto?
It was just unbelievable how many, for a period of time, it was like, I'll tell an anecdote that I'm not sure if told recently, but, you know, I was at Stanford in 98, 99, and I would go, and I was, you know, computer science, so I'd go to these job fairs at Stanford, and you'd be outside, and there'd be like hundreds of tables, like lined up in rows, right, for the job fairs, and all of them would be holding up signs, all right? None of the signs said even the name of the company. They all just said preipo.com. And so you're supposed to like just go, and then this is what the AI thing has felt like.
Right.
Again, I don't think it's not real because these are not, companies are not AI companies. They're just companies that use AI, like companies can use computers or the internet, right? But it got to be so, the term got so overused that it was just like, I had to stop looking at pitches for a while.
Yeah, I get it. So besides the themes, you guys also famous, you rarely take board seats, right?
I try like crazy to get off all boards and to never take board of director seats, yes.
But this is the opposite of most VCs.
Well, I don't know why most VCs take board seats.
I mean, let's dig into this because most VCs take board seats. Why don't you?
I don't think there's any upside in doing so. And so I guess if you're doing it and you're maybe if you're just starting on something or somehow you really know how to run said company, but I don't think I know how to run any company. And I definitely don't know how to run the company better than the founders. And so taking an observer seat, you get to like sit there and you're strategizing with the founders and you're having dinner and you're doing all this stuff. And that's like the fun part, this whole like being a director, there's actual like governance and stuff these days. I'm not a governance guy.
Okay. So you never feel like you want to be the guy on the joystick controlling what happens.
There's no controlling. You don't actually have control. You have all the downside and none of the upside for taking a board seat. It's like, I really just don't understand it at all.
And it helps you with your scoreboard too, right?
It doesn't help you with taking a board
seat. I mean, not taking the board seat.
Yes, not taking a board seat definitely helps with your scoreboard because you have more time to like focus on other things, right? The company is going to succeed or not based on the founders and based on the team that the founders hire and the execution of the team. It's not going to like succeed or die based on their board of directors, right? Like it's just, I've never heard of a company that succeeded or died based on who their board of directors was, unless their board of directors just like totally fucked it up. Right, like again, there's just like
negative.
There's just yeah, in the negative. Like it's just I've never seen the upside from it.
Yeah. So what else are VCs doing that you guys just don't agree with?
Oh, I don't know. that's a very broad question.
Reserves,
Well, I mean, there's not one right way to do venture capital, right? Like for some places, like setting reserves is probably the correct thing for them. We don't do it ever. We've never done reserve allocation in any fund, but that's because, you know, the next fund will just be the reserves for that. And we won't do a follow-on investment in a company unless we think that follow-on is going to like return a bunch of capital. So why wouldn't we do it out of another fund? And we've just historically been very good at that, right? So SpaceX is in, I don't know, something like six funds
right.
of ours. And no, we have not had one LP complaint about that ever.
Not since day one, right?
Never. And so that's how we think about it. And setting reserves just feels, it's also just completely arbitrary.
Yeah.
And so we tend not to do that. But then again, for other people, it might be correct to do the reserves, right? They're trying to like back the truck into a winner, let's say, and they have to reserve to like back the truck into the winner for said fund in order to do it. I get that. I have nothing against it. We don't have the analysis level to, or the patience level to be actual set reserves.
Do you think, I mean, you're very insistent that dogmatic kind of rules rarely work.
Correct.
Are there any that you have that you maybe in the back of your head thinking maybe that's not the right one? Maybe I need to reevaluate that.
Like I have the only rules that I have are only these days are only invest in top tier A+ founders.
That's it.
And don't do anything illegal.
Okay. simple rules for life.
So I don't need to change any of those.
Okay. So let's dig into sort of like how you get into Founders. You guys place a lot of option bets, obviously. 100K, million dollar checks or not.
I don't think we do 100K checks anymore, but yeah, we have a lot of million dollar.
A million bucks is not going to return billions of dollars.
No, nope, probably not.
How do you go from the option check to, hey, the whole partnership believes in this founder? How do you go to...
Like anything else. I don't even know that this option check even is a thing. Like, I'm not even sure we should be doing it, right? Like, and so, but again, different people run different strategies. And I actually don't even think it's an option, right? Like, if you're... A lot of times, if you write like some small check into a company, let's say that company is doing well. The company says, oh, well, we already have you on the cap table. Let's get somebody fresh. So it's like, I'm not even sure that that actually works at all. And so for me, again, everybody's running a different strategy. For me, I tend to write larger checks that are meaningful, that are much more infrequent, but that you get your ownership at the time you write your check because you have no idea what's going to happen in the future.
So you want to kill off those smaller checks?
I don't want to kill off anything. I think people can run their own strategy, but they better generate returns.
Okay. So anything that you're going through right now without naming names, is there a founder that you're digging into? I'd really like to learn your process. How you go from someone being introduced
to
you.
Well, no, for instance, like, I mean, I haven't done just somebody introduced to me new, for me personally, other people on the team have. For me personally, I haven't done a new introduction deal in a long time. But like even for Freeburg's Ohalo company, right? I wasn't the only one. Not even close to the deal. I was just the one being like, yeah, A-plus founder, back him no matter what. Other people like learned about the actual ag market and learned about the numbers of the company and figured out, oh, what's a fair price for this company?
So he's like, I know, like, this guy for 20
years. Evaluations are just completely made up, right? And so they actually dug into that. And so we had a ton of people on the team looking into seeing, yeah, because we didn't put $1 million in. We put, you know, something north of 30, right? Okay. Like, and so like, yeah, we had a lot of people doing the analysis in their own way on that one.
So how's a new founder get on your radar?
Network. I don't have, so if venture capital is, do you see the right deals? Can you pick the right deals? And can you get into the right deals? Then like, I think I'm pretty good at getting in, pretty okay at picking. I'm terrible at the seeing everything.
Yeah.
And so I do a lot of meetings with, you know, GPs of smaller funds just because like, I need them to send me the stuff that they would put a huge amount of money into because I have no ground game anymore. Like I can't go to networking events or whatever. I rely on teammates or other investors to help me on that part.
And your network is critical to your sourcing.
Your network is everything on sourcing. So I feel like networking, I feel like brand is a negative on sourcing because you see too much noise. I feel like brand is extremely positive on the getting in part. If you're like, again, venture capital, as much as we all hug each other, is like very ruthless on the inside and you've got to be able to get into these deals and brand matters there. And brand is about a lot about returns, right? And so brand matters on the getting in part. I think brand is a negative on the sourcing part, but I think network is critical on the sourcing part.
And you've said you have this weighted graph network. Is that in your head or is that in a system?
Pure in my head.
So there's no magic system at Founders Fund tracking all of our relationships?
Some people might have a magic system. other people on the team might have some system. I would have no idea how to use said system.
Okay. So what's the most broke thing about venture right now?
Oh, I think that it's just a lot of the returns from this wave are going to go to incumbents more than they have in the past. And that's a challenge. And everybody knows that. Everybody sitting here knows that, right? Like you're going to have so many of these returns going to Microsoft, Google, Amazon, whatever. And so like, yeah, there's going to be startups and companies that are worth a huge amount. But I think you are competing versus incumbents in a way that we never really have before because the incumbents were less competent then. Whereas, no, the modern Microsoft, modern Google, modern all these things are extremely competent.
Awesome. Thank you, Brian. That's our time. The age of incumbents.